It's that time of year again, Halloween season. On Blood and Black Rum Podcast, we take this very seriously. So, we're going back to the basics with what we're calling Halloweenies 2. Movies that take place on or around Halloween. Your favorites like Hocus Pocus, Ernest Scared Stupid, Terrifier, and more. Tune in all September and October as we smash jack-o'-lanterns and Oktoberfest in equal fashion.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Blood and Black Rum Podcast. I'm Ryan from CloseByStation.com, and we're here with another spooky episode with my thrilling co-host, Martin.
How's it going?
He didn't come in like Dracula or anything. It's hard, because when we do the show, we don't have the spooky music playing in the background. Maybe we should just put it on for ambience anyway. We won't add it to the recording, but we'll just put it on anyway. But,
That sounds like a horrific idea.
We don't have it playing in the background. I have it on the actual episode playing in the background. If you listen, you hear the screams and the clanking of chains and things like that. But it's hard to get into the spirit when you're just here with nothing in the background. But we're getting in the spirit anyway. We're week two into our Halloween series, which we're calling Halloweenies 2. I feel like I have to preface every episode with the reason behind Halloweenies 2. It's because it's named after a sequel to the Pete and Pete Halloween episode. It's called Halloweenie. And we're returning to Halloween classic movies. Movies that take place on or around Halloween. To really get into the spirit of the time. Because I don't know about you, but I watch horror movies pretty much all year long. Less so than I used to. Like, I don't really keep up with, like, all of the new releases or anything like that at this time. But I watch horror movies a lot. And so just watching them for Halloween doesn't really get me in the spirit. What gets me in the spirit is the actual festivities in the movie. So Halloween stuff happening in the movie. I don't know about you. You feel the same? You don't really get into the spirit of anything, so.
No, I don't.
He's just a curmudgeon all year long. Like, oh, is there another holiday coming up? Major holiday coming up? I don't care.
Yeah. If it weren't for me, fucking people like me, Charles Dickens wouldn't have books to write that are overly long because he's getting paid by the word to be so loquacious.
It's funny because you're like the complete opposite of me. Like, you're not excited about anything really about Halloween. And I'm over here like, I just got the new Charlie Brown Halloween cereal. Tastes like artificial vanilla. Orange and green balls in there.
I know you shat your pants when I sat you when I was at Target the other day. Tostitos has pumpkin Tostitos chips, where they're just chips, they're tortilla chips, which are already brittle, shitty chips that you can't really use for dunking unless you get the scoops for, you know, Halloween. Like, oh. Well,
shaped like bats and pumpkins.
Can't be bothered. Doesn't intrigue me. Doesn't, you know, get me going at all.
You're not the right person for this show. For the Halloween special. It's like coming out. These people tuning in for the first time, the Blood and Black Rum Podcast. They listen to our Halloween special. They're like all excited. Like, ooh, these guys are going to be really into it. This is like their wheelhouse. This is things they do all the time, like horror movies and stuff. They tune in to Martin. Here's Martin saying, yeah, Halloween's, it's all right. I don't really get excited about it.
I can get behind it more than, like, say, Christmas. Like, Halloween's a lot, you know, more fun than Christmas. Christmas sucks. You know?
If you had to name one of your favorite holidays, what would it be?
None, because I've worked them all.
Jesus Christ, what a depressing... What a depressing life. What do you look forward to? What time of the year do you look forward to? None. I fucking work all of it.
You don't work
American.
You didn't work retail long enough to have that. And I mean, I don't. Blessed be I that I don't work retail anymore and haven't almost a decade. When I did for 7 years, what was I doing on every holiday? working because we were the only store that was open. That's why Sears went bankrupt and you were working there. You were too busy giving away wrenches for free from 1954 and not working holidays.
It's true. It's true. You're darn right. All right, so for this Halloween episode, week two, we are... Last time we did a horror movie, you know, an actual Halloween horror movie. So we want to take a step back from doing, like, an actual horror movie, traditional horror, and then kind of go a different route for this episode, kind of go a different direction. Because we did have a few nostalgic Halloween movies picked out for this year. So we're going with one that's actually very close to my heart, and it's very nostalgic for me.
One that I picked, too.
Yeah, and one that you picked, which is interesting, because I didn't really think about it. And to be honest with you, I haven't really thought about this movie in over a decade, probably.
You're welcome.
But it used to be one of my favorite movies to watch during the Halloween season. I believe, hopefully I'm remembering correctly, that they used to play this movie all the time on, I don't know, something, UPN? I don't even know. But they used to play this movie all the time. And I used to watch it all the time. And I
remember... It's either UPN or like CW.
Something like that, yeah.
Definitely in the low wheelhouse of Warner Brothers.
Pre-CW. It was like WB.
Yeah, WB. Yes.
Yeah. Something like that is what it was played on. And to be honest with you, I'm kind of surprised that something like... Well, you know what? The Disney name is probably what's sucking away all the... the rights to this, but I was gonna say I'm surprised that something like ABC Family has not picked up this for like their 31 Nights of Halloween or whatever that they do.
Do they still even do that?
Oh yeah, they do, and you can bet that like 90% of it is just Hocus Pocus played on repeat. It's like they've got
why don't they do that? A Christmas Carol for TBS, just 24/7. Granted, I think if it weren't for Hocus Pocus, this film would maybe be Hocus Pocus.
It could be the Hocus Pocus. You're saying like it would?
Yes,
this film would take the place of the Hocus Pocus.
Yes, because Disney pumped this film out in '91, and then 2 years later pumped out Hocus Pocus, and then this film got kicked right to the curb. Like we don't ever have to see you again.
I agree, because there are some, in some capacity, this movie does feel similar in scope and tone to Hocus Pocus. It certainly does things a little bit differently than Hocus Pocus, but it does have a similar feel to it. And it has, like you said, you texted me about this when you were watching, it has a 90s Disney feel, which is considerably different than what today's Disney has, in terms of like, how they produce the movie, what kinds of things they would allow within the movie. Like now Disney has neutered everything down to the ground. If you watch the new Hocus Pocus 2, which is dismal, you'll see that there's a distinctive change in tone from the original Hocus Pocus.
Don't just say that because Batman is Lair's back.
Let her rest. That's what I say. But I think, like, you know, at the time in the 90s, early 90s, Disney was really kind of pumping out these films. And not so much under the Disney name. They were under the umbrella of Disney. My dad actually pulled out a little source of trivia that he found out, or like that he knew about, that I was even surprised by. Because he said, you know, he knew that Disney owned Hocus Pocus, but when they released Hocus Pocus back in the day, it wasn't under... the Disney name. It was under a different production company. Huh?
It's Touchstone, right?
It's a Touchstone. Yeah. And so my dad pulled that out and I was like, oh yeah. The distributor was Buena Vista. And he actually had it dead on. He was like, yeah, I think it was Buena Vista that distributed Hocus Pocus. And I was very surprised by that. But at the time, yeah.
Was it Well, let's say, yeah, they own, I think, Buena Vista and Touchstone, because, like, Free Willy's a Touchstone film.
Yep. So, and at that time, like, Disney would put out these, and they wouldn't necessarily need to have Disney plastered all over it. And that's the thing with Ernest Scared Stupid, too. This is a Touchstone Pictures film. It's not necessarily billed as a Disney movie, but it is. And I think that's where kind of the things were a little bit better back in the 90s, because as we see in this movie, they were a little bit more, gave a little bit more leeway to what they would allow on screen and what they would allow their kids, quote-unquote kids movies, to do. So what we're talking about is 1991's Ernest Scared Stupid, which is a, I believe it's the second in the Ernest series, and it's kind of funny. Yeah, you have to use the word series. It's not the second?
It's the fifth.
The fifth?
Yeah.
When did the Ernest series start?
1985 with Dr. Otto and the Riddle of the Gloom Beam.
That's an Ernest movie?
Yes.
News to me.
And then Ernest goes to camp, and then Ernest saves Christmas, then Ernest goes to jail, and then Ernest.
Oh, Ernest Saves Christmas was pre Ernest Scared Stupid as well. Huh?
They went, well, I say that came out, I think, around the same time that Christmas Vacay came out, and the poster is pretty Christmas Vacay. So
it
still
is, yeah.
So Disney is probably like, huh.
Well, actually, Christmas Vacation was, it came out in 1989, so.
Oh,
Ernest Scared Stupid was...
Beat him to the punch. Wow.
Pre-Christmas Vacation. You know, in Christmas Vacation, it would actually run with the one where Chevy Chase is getting electrocuted as their, like, I think their main poster artwork. But, yeah, no, it's very, very... Ernest Saves Christmas, very Christmas Vacation-esque.
Now, if I can... Yeah, so, like, I'm looking at all the Ernest films, and, like, they all seem like... I know, I think after... Rides Again, I think after that they're all home videos.
Mm-hmm.
In my head, I don't remember any Ernest film that I've ever seen like fully. I can't really re-put together all the bits except Jim Varney, but I know I've at least seen Ernest Goes to Camp, Saves Christmas, Scared Stupid, and Goes to School. Maybe I've seen more, but I mean, in my head, I know, like, from the names, like, at least that I know that I've seen them. But again, outside, because every Ernest film, and God Bless the Poor Man's Heart, Jim Varney, rest in peace, each Ernest film is just him going to...
You know, and I do need to point out, Dr. Otto, that is not an Ernest movie. They just posthumously...
Oh, tagged it.
Got into Ernest stuff. They put it on the poster and said, "Hey, this is Ernest. It's Dr. Otto." But yeah, it's not an Ernest movie. So you're still close, though. I mean, I actually didn't realize that these movies that took place prior to Ernest Scared Stupid in that
apparently
like,
though
were like an '80s or late '80s movie.
Well, we'll say, or apparently even like in the early '80s, he was doing commercials as Ernest.
Yeah, it looks like Jim Varney worked pretty closely with John R. Cherry. The third, who directed Ernest Scared Stupid and directed most of the Ernest movies, too. He directed Ernest Goes to Camp, Ernest Saves Christmas, the poorly received Ernest Goes to Africa.
He even had his own TV show on CBS in 1988 called Hey Vern, It's Ernest.
Yeah, then which was surprising to me as well, because I did not realize... I guess a lot of these were before our time, for sure. I mean, Ernest Scared Stupid truly did come out well before I would have been, watching any movie like it. It came out in 1991. I was born in 1989, so I would have only been, 3 years old at the time. So I wouldn't have caught Ernest Scared Stupid at the time. Probably.
I can't believe after watching some of these, like, they even hit the theater. Like, watching this film, I'm like, this had to be direct-to-video. And now they had to go all in the theater.
Well, this one in particular does feel more... I've seen Slam Dunk Ernest, which definitely feels direct-to-video. These ones do feel a little bit more professional than some of those other direct-to-video movies. Which was kind of surprising to me. Like when I was watching Ernest Scared Stupid, I was expecting more of a very like cheap feel to it, but it actually doesn't have as much of a cheap feel as I thought it would. And we'll talk about that as we get further on into the movie. But this one is very near and dear to my heart. Like I said, I wasn't watching it in 1991, of course, but later on in life, probably when I was 6, 7, 8, I don't know, when they were playing this on TV, I fucking loved this movie. I would watch this all the time. If it was on, I was watching it. And watching this again, probably, I want to say 15 years, later, probably even longer. I want to say probably 20 years since I've actually seen this movie. The opening title cards really brought back my memory of this movie. I was like, holy shit, I remember that song. I remember these title cards. And it definitely was a big nostalgia hit for me. Because like I said, I used to watch this movie all the time. Kind of really brought that back. You said you've seen this, but it wasn't really a big part of your childhood.
Nothing that would stick in my mind, no. Like I said, for Ernest work, all lot that really sticks in my head is just Jim Varney, the character, in his work.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. If you were picking on this film, like I said, that I know that I've seen, and try to tell me what's going on there, I'd have an incredibly hard time remembering outside of him being like, also, if you remember too, like back in high school when we had in our French and Spanish classes, all the emotions, but in either French or Spanish, what was the card, Ryan?
Mm-hmm. Yep, Jim acting them out with his facial features.
In like 40 different emotions, in the most like rubbery, facial expressions ever. And one of our friends called it Ernest Goes Broke. When he realized that it was Jim.
The various expressions. Which, to be fair, the man does have a lot of facial expression, course, that he can move. Because he does have a nice variety of facial expressions that he uses in this movie. It's very expressive. So we'll talk about that too. All right, let's take a break. We've gone long enough on our intro. Let's take a break real quick and talk about the beer that we got on our show today, because you picked up a new beer for us that was new to me. I've never seen this one before that I can think of in stores. What'd you get?
Oh, let me carry it. Well, when I went down to our local beverage center originally I was looking for a Marzen that we will do later on because it's been on our radar for quite a while. As I was looking for that beer, and I was looking at the cooler and what they had in there, I saw a new German Marzen in there. And we have never done, because we have done on the show Paulaner, Hofbräu, couple others, and so I was like, and we've done not just under Marzen's, but we've also done like their fest beers too. So I was like, I gotta get this, because it's also for once reasonably priced. I had to double check to make sure that it wasn't 7 years old. And then once it passed the test, grabbed it, try it and see what it's like. And it is, and excuse me if I butcher the German on it, it is Hacker and Pishore Shore Brewery, and this is their Oktoberfest Marzen Original Filtered Fest Beer, which is giving you all sorts of kind of confusion if you're somebody who does like Oktoberfest greatly like we do, because again, there's a difference when it comes to the styles between Marzens and Fest Beers. Quite a bit of a difference. So, the fact that they call it an Oktoberfest Marzen, but then it's an original filtered fest beer, what the fuck? But, as I take a nice sip from it, I can safely say this is a delightful Marzen, and I think it's got all the right notes to it. I like this a lot, to be honest with you. It's not overly malty. It is very bready. It is very, kind of earthy. It has like I don't know if it's from the way they brewed it. the type of hops or whatever. It has a nice honey sweetness to the end. Kind of like if you were drinking like a Jenny Honey Brown with like the good part of that. A little nice little kiss of honey at the end. It's very filling. It has a nice crisp finish to it. Very drinkable, you know. It sucks that today is a day where it's like 95 degrees out. This is like a delightful campfire beer. It's definitely incredibly bready. Very, you know, very malty, very crisp, easy to drink. I really do like the fact that it has like a nice little honey taste to the end that adds like a nice kind of differentiation for the style itself. This is a top-notch Marzen, and I like it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I really like this one from Hacker Shore, however you say the name. I think that this one has, you know, so it's kind of, for me, it's kind of in between. It's definitely more malty, bready, caramely than a fest beer. Heavier. But it's also not as on like the high malty side as some of like the more American Oktoberfest Marzens, the style. So I kind of put it in the middle ground between a fest beer and Marzen. Either way, though, I think it's really good. I think it has a nice character to it, nice bready texture. It's kind of on the heavier side for at least in my opinion. You know, it's got some body to it. I do get sort of that like honey sweetness that you're talking about towards the, you know, the back end of the taste. And I think this is a really, really solid Oktoberfest style. One that's very drinkable. Like for me too, even though it's been really hot out, I think this actually works really well. You're right. It does work as a campfire beer. It also works for me as sort of like a quenching beer too. I think that either way, you can kind of drink it. It's not really defined by like a specific type of season. And that's kind of like the fest beer way. The fest beer is like more of like your drinkable social type setting beer where you're going to do more of a session, maybe more suited for hot, warmer weather. And then your Marzen style is more of like that heavier, breadier, malty, getting you prepared for winter style. So this being in the middle, I think, puts it in a good position for both types of drinking weather. So I really like this one. I certainly would get this again. I think, you know, in a 12-pack, this would be something that would really go down smooth over the course of like a weekend or something like that if you're really celebrating an Oktoberfest. Very, very solid. And I definitely would recommend this one if someone was asking about like more traditional German Oktoberfest style. Give Hacker Shore a try. Shore. Hacker. Shore. Shore. I don't know. However you say it. Someone can correct us on the pronunciation of that. And it does make me want to try some of the other styles that they put out for the U.S.
Kind of the great thing about these actual German ones, because it's like they're all like, god damn, that's a good beer.
You're impressed and you want to find the others.
It's like, yeah, wow, why can't Busch be like this?
Why can't Yangling's Oktoberfest be this good? Well, you know what, the Germans, they've had centuries to perfect the style.
So is Yingling.
True.
America's oldest brewery is about to turn 205.
Well, years. Can Yingling say that they've been making beer since 1417? Because that's what this Hacker Shore bottle says. Since 1417 through today, Hacker Shore is considered the special beer for heavenly day-to-day moments. I don't think Yingling can claim that right.
Damn, but they're descendants of it.
True.
I want a Yingling Hefeweizen. Let's go. See if they can.
I think that would be a risk.
Of course it would, but be like, let's see what they do. How now, Verna?
Be like bungee jumping without checking your cords.
That's a risk you could take.
You'd probably be okay.
Anytime you ever drinking Yingling. You're always taking your risk.
I will not apologize for my Yingling gate. Probably the best one we've had recently is the Hershey Squirts Porter. You know what I mean?
This is okay, but I mean,
yeah, it was pretty good.
Hershey's chocolate's not that good to begin with.
How dare you say that as I visited Hershey Park not too long ago. I have to bring that to the attention of their directors.
Yeah.
That you've said that.
Yeah, giving them all your money.
My friend said, your chocolate, it's just okay.
No, you're not good.
All right. Moving on to Ernest Scares Stupid. Sorry, we have Hershey Park directors listening in, and I can't afford to have you lambasting them.
Well, same thing, too. You better fucking buck up and give a good review of Ernest, because Disney's listening in. Bob Iger's listening in right
or now. It is the spooky season. Perhaps Jim Varney is lingering around us. Which, of course, we do have to mention. During Ernest Scared Stupid, it was 1991. I think Jim Varney died in, like, 2000. So, like, yeah. Only 9 years after this movie, he passed away from lung cancer. And it's, apparently he was a pretty heavy smoker, which you could tell from his voice. I mean,
he doesn't have that fast music, you know. It was okay
sad,
back
though.
Then.
What's that?
What's that? That was okay back then.
Right. It is sad, though, that we lost him at such an early... who knows? Maybe we could have had an Ernest Scared Stupid 2. A revival on Disney Plus, just like Hocus Pocus 2.
He would have been, like, 80 years old now. He's born in the 40s.
Yeah, I know. I'm just joking.
But they would. They probably would wheel him up. Come on, Jim. Come on. You can't collect your pension unless you get him...
I know. Jim, can you dress up like that woman again, please? The woman with the hairspray.
Jim, pretend you're Augustus Caesar. Pretend you're the Ottomans, but you're dressed up like a fucking Mongolian.
I mean, I just do feel bad, thinking about, you know, what we could have gotten from an earnest sort of, like, continuation. But it is what it is. It did leave a legacy. So, Ernest Scared Stupid, like I said, the thing that really stuck out to me watching this movie for coming back to it for like one of the first times since probably 2 decades since I've seen this movie is the opening credits, because those really stood out to me as being a really cool, like, little play on traditional horror movies, camp horror movies. I really like, even now, I really like those credits because they do such a good job of kind of like setting the mood, setting the tone. You know, you're getting like this kind of cheesy, low budget sort of B movie. And they set that in motion with those credit sequences where they kind of take from old, you know, horror movies and kind of put them together with like a just ridiculous shots of Ernest being abused by a monster hand that he's finagling. I really like that opening credits. And not only that, but this theme song is quite catchy, at least in my opinion. What do you think about those opening credits?
Pretty cool. So like the... excuse me, best part of the film.
Not starting off on a high note here is like the... yeah, the credits. The best part of the film.
They put a lot of effort and energy.
They did, though.
And they... because, I mean... if you think about it now, I mean, no, you are right. It is very nostalgic, because if you were to watch Ernest Scared Stupid now and, like, clips they use for from classic horror films to kind of give that vibe, nobody would know what the fuck's going on. You'd be like, this is supposed to be scary? This is Halloween-y? This is going to be your son when you show up to him and he's more cognizant in, like, 4 years. He's like, this is Halloween? You're going to be like, God damn it, it is Halloween, you little shit. Because it's not, like, if you think about it, like, especially, like, how modern horror is kind of produced, like, we are so far away from, like, that as, like, a what, like, the films kind of digs from, like, classic, like, universal horror, as an idea of, like, scary and, you know, Halloween-y, that it is nice. Like, it's nice to see, because, like, it's still, that kind of still resonate, you know, does still resonate with me, like, to watch. It's like, yeah, that's classic horror.
Like, you mean, like, classic horror in the sense, like, Universal Monsters, it sort of, like, gives you the vibe of Halloween?
Classic, yeah, even though none of those films, like, have anything to do with Halloween, like, mm-hmm. Dracula, Frankenstein, or whatever, they are like, that does have a nice, warm, nostalgic feeling of, like, yeah, that's Halloween, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and that seems like it was even the case in 1991 when this film was made. I mean, you know, of course, again, we're speaking not from experience because we didn't live through that time frame, but it seems like Ernest Scared Stupid was really going for that vibe. And I can say, you know, even though we didn't grow up with that, I also agree that the Universal Monsters and some of, like, the classic horror movies, they do have that Halloween vibe, even though they don't have anything to do with Halloween. And I think that's partially because of how much play they would have gotten during that time, and the things like monster movie marathons, and even, like, theatrical, like, double features of monster movies like that.
Mystery Science 3000.
Yeah, that all would have been, you know, really big. I mean, it was big, even in our childhood. I remember TCM and AMC, they would really, like, go wild during the Halloween season and be showing constantly, like, you know, the classic monster movies, 50s movies, you know, Lon Chaney movies, things like that. So I do think that does have a nice nostalgic feel that works really well in these credits. And I think that's what they were going for, and they nail it. I think they do a really good job with that. But as you get into the movie, you start to see too, like, the atmosphere of this movie, like, and like you said, a lot of the later Ernest movies were direct to video. This movie does have a pretty good budget when it comes to the settings, the, you know, the background scenery and locales. It's in some ways cheap, but I think they did a pretty good job with the set design, for the most part, making it look fairly realistic and actually having Halloween elements to the movie. Because if you look in all the backgrounds, you know, you have a school, got crepe paper everywhere, you know, set up specifically for Halloween. You've got jack-o'-lanterns on stoops. You've got a local grocery store that's, like, completely festooned with Halloween attire. It's a nice treat to see this movie, you know, have Halloween featured in the backgrounds of things, because that's a big sticking point for me when it comes to Halloween movies. You got to have the stuff in the background. You can't just say, oh, it's October 31st, and then just try to get away with, you know, oh, it's Halloween, but, like, literally nothing in the background looks like Halloween at all. Like, we don't have any jack-o'-lanterns. We don't have any, you know, actual costumes or anything like that. I think the movie does a pretty good job of selling that point that it's Halloween. What did you think about that?
No, I agree. It's kind of funny, too, like, to kind of give it the Hocus Pocus comparison. With Hocus Pocus, it's focused on, like, Massachusetts in the 1600s during the witch trials. Like, oh, you know, yeah, that makes sense. Because that film was later, it kind of, like, it's like, that makes more sense than this film, where it's like Missouri in the late 19th century. Like, it's a troll.
In this movie, too, it says Missouri is, like, sometime, like, olden days or something like that.
I know, but, like, it's like old Missouri. And it's like, well, what year could it be? It's like, oh, you see, the blacks, African Americans are running around freely, so it's not during the Civil War or anything before then. So, like, when could it be? It's just
not only that, but, like, Eartha Kitt's character is still alive.
Yeah, so it's like,
experienced it. So, yeah. How old are we talking?
It's supposed to be, like, late 19th century, but still, it's kind of weird. Like, yes, the tale of the werewolf, which, by the way, too, when you see that opening, do you think it's going to be a troll or a werewolf?
Oh, yeah, I think you're spot on. The claw looks like a werewolf claw.
You'd think it's going to be a fucking, like, story about lycanthropy, but not, no, it's these fucking hobgoblin-looking fucks running around in their oversized leprechaun troll suits like they're on a Bruno Mattei sheet. You know, it's fucking ridiculous. Like, the idea, like, it's set it up is so fucking stupid. Funny, but stupid. See, and it's kind of ruined, too, because they're doing, like, the Evil Dead cam chase. Like, you know, following the girl who's running. But because she is only, like, God bless her soul, like, 6 or 7 years old, she's constantly looking back at the camera and kind of smiling as she's running. Like, did you get that? It's just so fucked. Before then, it gets captured. And like, oh yeah, throw chains on it. And then throw it as a whore.
Yeah, it is weird, you know, because like if you think about the opening scene where it sets up this idea that you kind of do when you, especially when you see like the late 19th century garb or the, early 19th century garb, you're thinking like, oh, it's like going to be, you know, witch hunt time, you know, like stuff like that. And then all of a sudden, they just like bring out a guy who's a fucking troll, and they're like, you know, I curse you for putting me in this hole because I'm a troll. It's like, no, man, you don't just, it's not like your witch is just blending in with society. It's like, you're fucking, you know, 4 foot, 350 pound troll. You don't just get to run around doing your bidding or, you know, turning people into wooden figurines because you feel like playing intricate chess. What I think is kind of funny too about the Missouri setting is Missouri in the fall, if you look into it, actually looks like fall like anywhere else, like, you know, upstate New York where we are, you would probably see the same things, fall foliage, orange trees, leaves falling, things like that. In this movie, you don't get any of that. This is straight out of John Carpenter's Halloween territory here where they were like, oh shit, we forgot. We're filming in California, but we forgot that we're supposed to be set in Missouri. So no falling leaves will be seen. No fall foliage. No great big piles of kids jumping in them. No, there ain't no foliage to be found in this movie. It's all lush greenery during the October season, which I found pretty funny. So the movie sets up this idea that like, oh, there's a curse, there's a troll, and Ernest is a whorl, and apparently the whorls are the ones that were cursed, because in the opening scene you see Ernest, who's actually playing like a an elder of the village, and he's basically, yeah, reverend. He's basically sentencing him to eternal damnation, and it's a whirl. And so they set up this idea that, like, well, Ernest is the natural ancestor of those people who were cursed, and he's going to be cursed as well. And that's where, like, kind of the idea that Ernest has to, like, save the day because he's the one that's cursed. And he's here in this town. He's a sanitation worker who apparently has been given orders by the police officers. As you said in this movie, why is the police giving Ernest orders of what to do?
Go clean up that shit, Ernest. And it's like, why is the sheriff telling him what the fuck to do?
Yeah. I don't know of any sanitation workers that take direction directly from the sheriff's department. Didn't know that was public works, but he's basically a 40-year-old man driving around town, hanging out with, you know, young 10-year-olds. And as my wife pointed out, it's kind of a problematic look to have a 40-year-old guy chauffeuring kids around.
Children? Yeah, no. That's how you can tell it's the 90s. Like, oh, that's just a local town idiot, Ernest, you know. Carrying our children away. It's okay. Let, let the idiot play.
I know. Yeah, it's pretty funny because like that definitely wouldn't fly. Can you imagine now? Like a movie would be set all about Ernest being the villain. They'd be like, fucking guy driving around in his garbage truck, picking up kids.
Sounds like the remake to Nightmare on Elm Street, but
yeah, right.
But instead of being lit on fire in like a furnace, it's, you know, he's crushed in his garbage thing. But no, like, because like if you think about it, too, like back in the day, if you're gonna get picked up by your parents, just come and pick you up, right, from school or whatever. We have some friends now, when they go to pick up their pre-K daughter, they have a fucking ticket with their number on it, so you can, like, it matches with the child to make sure that you're picking up the right child and that you're not a predator. Like, so weird. Like, the whiplash kind of thinking about it is kind of, like, extraordinary, because it's the same thing, like, people that I work with and their kids are, like, 13 years old, and I'm still hearing, like, yeah, we gotta wait for the babysitter. And it's like, what do you mean babysitter? It's like, oh, you have to wait till like they're 14 now to leave them alone. It's like, what? My parents left us long, like 10 years old, 9 years old. Like, yeah, we'll see you later.
Yeah, I mean, the movie is 30 years old, so.
No, I know. But it's just like, it's just funny to think, kind of funny to think about now. I mean, I don't have kids, so like, I mean, you do. So it's for me, it's like, I get it, but at the same time, it is kind of like a culture shock. If I think, like, if I reach back into the recesses of my brain's memory of childhood, and it's like, Jesus,
and there aren't any fucking adults around.
And it's like,
well, maybe that was why serial killers prospered so well back then. There are very little limitations to what they could do.
I think they prosper more now than they did back then.
Probably.
Just show up with a gun.
The body count is certainly higher than singling out one child at a time. Yeah, I mean, so ultimately, Jim Varney is, you know, this guy who's supposed to be cursed. And, you know, as luck would have it, he accidentally goes to this tree with these kids and unleashes the curse by reciting this thing that Eartha Kitt's character, who plays basically a lady who just she's a hoarder, basically. She lives on a farmhouse area, and she just has trash and shit all over her yard, and just lives there with all of her stuff, and kind of has the crazy, basically crazy lady look, long, dirty hair. And her job is to come out and just yell at people all the time. Very traditional, crazy lady thing to do. And she tells Ernest, hey, don't say this exact phrase on this exact tree, because you'll unleash a curse. And there's a troll that will rise from the grave out of the earth underneath the tree and wreak havoc on this town. And what does Ernest do?
Fucking
does that exact thing. And so that's what raises the troll. And I think you're right about this. The whole idea of the troll, really strange idea for this movie. Why a troll? Why not more traditional monster from like the Victorian era, the 19th century? Why a troll? Don't know. It's a really weird concept for me. Maybe they just wanted to be different. Maybe they just wanted to have a unique character. But the troll is kind of a weird thing for this movie. And I don't know if I like it. I don't know if I like the troll aspect to it.
I don't either. It kind of subdues what the film's doing.
Because Like you were saying, like Universal monster movies, those are very nice and traditional, bring back a nostalgic feeling, and the film gets that, and you know, has that as part of the credits, knows like the Halloween atmosphere, gets that right, and then all of a sudden it introduces a troll, and you're like thinking, trolls aren't Halloween-y. You know, like what would be more Halloween-y, like traditional werewolf, traditional vampire sort of thing, but no, we get a troll. I do think that's the film's misstep, really, is the troll element to it. Now, with that said, I do think it does a pretty good job with the trolls. It has a nice tactile treatment of the special effects of the trolls. You know, has attention to detail. They really do a good job of, like, the costume design. A lot of, like, snottiness to it as well, which is kind of disgusting in its own right, but works really well for this movie with a troll. You know, they get a lot of this, like, slime coming out of its mouth and nose and stuff like that. I think it works really well in terms of how they design the special effects. But from a storyline standpoint, I don't know that the troll is the best thing for this movie. What did you think about the whole idea of, like, the book that tells them exactly what to do for the troll against the trolls, and, like, the whole, like, lore of the troll setup?
It's like Necronomicon.
Yeah.
That was okay. I mean, like, the whole Necronomicon, like, aspect is kind of, it's just kind of like me, whatever.
But, like, it kind of gives them a riddle that they have to solve, right? And then they take it into consideration. Like, they're not sure what it means. It's like a mother's love and things like that. And initially, they start to use milk because they realize that the trolls are
lactose intolerant.
Yeah, allergic. they can't handle their milk. They have massive diarrhea.
Which is the dumbest fucking thing in the world. Like, so unbelievably fucking stupid. Like, I can't help but, like, laugh and chortle and be like, this still so stupid.
Yeah, you like, because the idea that milk is what does it, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because it's, like, so out of left field, and so, like, this is where kind of, like, the whole, like, 90s, like, just random Disney film aspect comes from. It's like, oh, how are we going to overcook this? They know, by milk! And then you see him get shot by, like, an Uzi filled with milk, and you're like, and just turn into cartoon dust.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I found fucking hilarious about the milk, though, is when the one kid grabs, like, a milk carton and throws it into the car like a grenade.
And then just nothing happened. Like, you don't see the milk go anywhere. Just like, all of a sudden, the trolls just turn into fucking fart dust.
I thought it was so funny, like, when the kid opens up the milk carton and just, like, right into the window. It's pretty damn funny.
I love that they got revolvers and Uzis of, like, just filled up with milk, and they're just sitting there firing it off at these trolls, and then Jim Varney's just like, oh, yeah, here I am, look at your breath here.
I actually thought it was pretty interesting that the movie goes as far as it does, especially when they first show, like, the first troll that gets blasted by milk, and it's just like a pile of oozing, like, bloody guts.
Yeah, it turns into fucking, like, goo, like, it's been, like, acidified into, like, bones, and then to see the dad be like, go get him, kid! That's also how you know the film's from the 90s. Now, if your kid, like, turned a troll into dust, you wouldn't be like, go finish the rest of them off. You'd be like, get your ass back here, you little shit!
One thing that I do like about how the parents react to this movie, because, again, this is, like, a definitely Disney 90s movie where the parents are absent at best.
Inept fucking cucks assholes, just totally absent from everything.
The one scene where they show, I think it's Elizabeth, her name is, the young girl that's the friend there, and they show her mom come in, and she's like, Mom, I think there's something under the bed. And the mom is, like, not
happy at all.
She's like, you get your fucking ass off the bed right now, because there's no goddamn troll under your bed. And you get out there and you fucking put your costume on and we're going to this party. She's definitely
a 90s mom.
She's sick of the shit. It was like, she's like, I don't want to hear about you being scared on Halloween, okay?
Listen here, little lady. If I have to miss my square dancing...
my special Roseanne-inspired Halloween square dance... I'm going to live...
To Brooks and Dunn's Neon Moon, I swear...
I will divorce your father, okay, Elizabeth? I really will do it.
That's what we call divorce papers around here, Neon Moon. Because he's the sheriff, because he's too busy walking around in his sheriff's uniform, even off duty, sleeping in bed, still wearing his sheriff's uniform. Seriously, I think we brought it up before, though, but don't you love these films where the sheriff, which, again, if you're politically fucking retarded and you don't know what a sheriff does, they're the chief law enforcement agent of a county. But in films, they always make them like they're the overlord of a town. So you mean to tell me in this one town, this asshole sheriff spending all of his time, you know, lording over it to yell at poor Ernest to go pick up trash at a house?
Yeah, that's what he's doing.
What a waste of the county's tax dollars.
And then like that trickles down from the mayor, who's basically saying, sure,
you tell fucking Ernest to get his ass over there. I need an all points bulletin out on my children. God, you leave the law into the law.
Yeah.
Then he's just in naps.
I do love the way that the fascism of the government kind of shines through in this movie.
Wow, what fascism.
So what do you think about those troll designs, though? Because there's actually multiple trolls in this movie. Not just the big guy, but...
I hate them. They're too fucking stupid. It's just, I'm getting, like, flashbacks of, like, Troll 2.
Yeah.
Just so, and Leprechaun. They're, like, so cheap and chintzy and stupid looking.
I mean, they're supposed to be, though. They're not supposed to be, like, terrifying.
But that's why it's stupid that they chose trolls. Werewolf would have been a better choice. The trolls take me out of the film because they're so fucking ridiculously stupid. I mean, all I can think of the entire time is like a Leprechaun film. Like, why is it Warwick Davis giving me shitty one-liners about, you know, Shame and McGody?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the troll thing is a misstep. I don't really think that they needed the trolls. But I do think that the movie does what it does right with the idea that it has. I also have to say that I agree with what you told me, that the movie feels about 20 minutes too long. I do agree with that as well, at least watching now as an adult. Probably as a kid, I was taken by it. I was just like, oh, this is a great movie.
Laughing the entire time. Just
exactly. As an adult, it definitely runs a bit long. There are scenes that are added to this movie, too, that you can tell... just really don't belong. They feel out of place or like they should have been edited out. There's one scene in particular that stuck out to me when Eartha Kitt's character runs and grabs her bike from the Halloween party. And it's just like an extended scene of her getting the bike and leaving, which is something that you would generally edit out of a movie because like there serves no purpose. And it's
to watch her sit there and
grab her bike and leave. It's like, It serves no purpose. It's like just a lead-in sequence that like the audience infers. They don't need to know about it. So if they see her on her bike later, they're like, well, she fucking took a bike. You know, they don't need to have this whole extended sequence of her leaving on a bike. So some of those scenes just feel extended for no reason, like they should have been edited out. So I do agree. I think this movie runs a little bit long. And it could have been edited, pared down a little bit. The Halloween dance, too, probably doesn't need to take place. That's pre Hocus Pocus though too. 1991, the Halloween dance here, this Halloween party. There's a pretty famous scene in Hocus Pocus with a Halloween dance, and
well, that's at a parental dance because mom's wearing the Madonna
cone.
That's true. And I don't know if you ever... Did you ever go? We actually, in our town, we used to have a Halloween party dance. Do you remember that?
No.
I don't know. Was this a 90s thing? Did every town have to have a Halloween dance? Was it like a mandate?
I went to our school Halloween dance.
No.
Chased us around with a freaking chainsaw, but
no, not. The town used to have a Halloween dance at the firehouse, inside the firehouse. My dad used to DJ it.
Oh.
And yeah, this was a thing, and they did it for a number of years. And it's kind of funny because it's just like you see these movies. Like, I don't know, maybe they got the idea from like Ernest Scare Stupid or Hocus Pocus, where they're like, oh, we should have a town Halloween dance.
We just get drunk and go.
Whatever the case, they used to do these. I don't know why. It was a thing.
I think you need to bring it back.
Mm. I agree. You know what? Do you done trick-or-treating? You head on over to the town hall? You have yourself a dance-off and a hot dog eating contest.
Well, because you can't let your kids leave your kids alone until they sign up for the military. So they're going to be 20 years old. And I can't go to the dance and drink. Fucking Timmy's got to play Call of Duty.
Thank God I don't have kids.
That's right. What would you do?
Throw them in a river. I don't know.
What do you think about Jim Varney's facial expressions and his multiple personalities and things like this?
The multiple personalities thing is fine at first, but like when it chimes in at points where they're not necessary, it's like, what are we doing? Like, that whole Ottoman bit is funny, but at the same time, goes on for like 7 minutes.
I mean, it definitely...
Like, what the fuck?
It definitely has a weirdness to it that I don't necessarily understand why they went for it. Like, the Botswanian lumberjack, whatever the fuck. Like, I don't quite understand what the idea was behind it, but I think it's funny regardless. And to be honest with you, if you think about it too, the amount of time that he must have spent getting into costume for just like two... shots of that character.
Well, like I said though, I think if we reach back into the recesses of our mind, I think that's a Varney bit of him like doing that shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at least the old woman I know. Caesar, not so much. But, I mean, like, I get it, but it overstays its welcome. Like, they run the joke into the ground. Like, if you had, like, four, like, quick cuts of, like, I'm the Ottoman, and then I'm the old woman, and then I'm Caesar, and then, like, okay, done, move on. But no, they do it for six more minutes of going, like, you know, through each character. So, I mean, and I don't blame Jim for that. I blame poor editing.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, they're fine enough. I mean, if anything, like, Jim is charismatic. I can see how they wrangled not like the eight Ernest films that they did, but I can see how he's charismatic enough to have gotten a couple of films, because Jim is really charismatic and goofy and fun, but he's very much a goofy and fun that's totally meant for kids and for a younger audience, and not for something that's going to be like a lasting humor.
Mm-hmm. What did you think about the wooden, like, statues that the troll turns the kids into? Was that surprising to you, like, that it would go that far to actually have the kids turn into statues?
It's not even the most violent part of the film. He runs down the troll a couple of times, like, yeah, turn him into goo.
He's like, Scoop, he's got to be goo beneath the truck right now.
Can't do that anymore. Has the bullets from the sheriff's gun as he's tied to the car.
Yeah.
Well, handcuffed to the car. And they shoot the bullets at the sheriff. The can't do that.
My wife was, my wife commented on that too. She was like, wow, I'm surprised they did that.
him almost getting crushed to death in the trash in his, you know, his garbage truck.
Star Wars style. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the baby doll head that he takes, he's like, oh, I'm gonna have to throw you in the gears, and the kid's like, oh no, but I have a baby. He's like, yeah, the doll for you or me, who's gonna get
It's pretty hilarious though, actually.
Like it's funny, but it is so stupid, because I mean, and that part does overstate its welcome too, but like, and the writing's really shoddy, but I think Jim makes it, you know, enjoyable, and I think his mugging is the fun part of the film, and his and other Ernest projects, but I mean, that's only going to go so far. So if you don't like, you know, Jim Varney's mugging in this, like, if that's not, like, your top thing that you enjoy out of this, you're not ever going to like your Ernest thing, because this is what he does the entire time, is just mug to the camera and, you know, say these stupid, goofy lines.
Yeah, I agree. If you don't like what Jim Varney does, you're definitely not going to like Ernest Goes Stupid. But if you can get into the, like, dumb juvenile humor that he presents, it could be an enjoyable experience. I'll give it that. I thought it was, even for me, like, now, I did enjoy it to a certain extent, and I could see the appeal for 8-year-old me, who probably would have found a lot of this stuff hilarious. I still found it a bit genuinely funny at times. It's
when the troll's like holding onto his truck and he's like, oh no, and it's breaking through the window, and he kicks the lock down. The window's, you know, been busted open, but he kicks the lock down. He's like, ha, can't be. Like, that's so stupid, but it's so fucking funny. Like, it's like, you know, you remember that? No,
I do. Yeah, I do.
And like like, it's so fucking stupid, but it's so fucking funny. Like, oh, I can't. And then as the troll starts, like, climbing through, he's like, ah! You
know? And, how would you
rate... That poor dog.
True. Yeah. How would you rate the Halloween in this? As a vibe, as a feeling, as an atmosphere?
A 6.5. Because a lot of it's, not even 6.5, like a 6. Because a lot of it's like the whole troll stuff and the, you know, the creepy Sleepy Hollow forest. You know, when you're actually in town, it's not really Halloween-y, even though it's supposed to take place on Mischief Night. And the Halloween dance these fourth graders are forced to go to as a town is just pathetic.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it does capture a vibe, probably not the best vibe for Halloween. I think there's definitely movies that do that better. I think it does capture some element of Halloween, especially if you look in the backgrounds, like very nostalgic style drugstore cut up Halloween decorations can be seen, you know, the die cut stuff. Definitely brings back some memories for me of, like, you know, now places have all different kinds of, you can get Halloween decorations from fucking everywhere, right? Back then, you had, like, I'm going to go to CVS, I'm going to go to Walmart, and those were, like, the places you could get your Halloween decorations, so everybody had the exact same Halloween decorations. So when you think about Halloween stuff from the 90s, everybody's remembering the same Halloween decorations, because everybody had the same shit. So that's why, like, so watching some of these movies, it, like, it's very nostalgic, because you remember, like, I had that. I fucking had that witch, you know, poster in the background. I had that graveyard silhouette thing that they had. So I think this film kind of captures that. It's kind of got that feel of, like, and it kind of has that feel of, like, Halloween TV commercial, too, you know? You know, it's got, like, sort of that, like, that vibe to it. The other thing that I should point out too is Dunkin' Donuts gets there in the background. If you notice, there's a nice
You can see the product placement in the film. It's not even product placement because it's the 90s. Who cares?
Yeah,
Dunkin' Donuts, all the Coke stuff, the Chex Mix,
Chex Mix prominently displayed. Yep.
Listen, it's okay because they went crashing through the wheat Chex display, which everyone knows is the worst Chex.
That's right.
Yeah.
It goes corn, it goes rice, wheat.
No, I'm rice corn.
Oh, okay, you're a rice fan. They're one and two. They're right there. Wheat is definitely a third by country mile. So you're right about
that. What about Honey Nut Chex? Those
Honey Nut Chex are way up there too. Yeah, yeah. Maybe number one.
Yeah, that blows them all out. Like Honey Nut Chex.
If I have to have corn Chex, I've got to add sugar. But Honey Nut Chex?
Is that a thing that kids even do anymore?
What, add sugar to
the cereal?
Well, I mean, if they're probably kids aren't getting that kind of cereal anymore. But yeah, like at the time, especially at that time, if mom got the boring corn Chex, add sugar. Regular Rice Krispies, add sugar.
That's the thing too. So like, does like any household have like a jar of sugar just off to the side anymore? Is that
we do? But yeah, that was what I was saying at the time.
I would say I never did really add sugar because the cereal's sweet enough. My sister would sit there and like throw like 10 globs in it, like she was the fucking cockroach from Men in Black.
Yeah, I used to, especially with Rice Krispies. If they were plain Rice Krispies, I'd be sprinkling some sugar on there.
Yeah.
Speaking of, though, we don't really see much candy in this movie.
No, there's like one trick-or-treating scene, too.
Yeah. Yeah, that... No jack-o'-lantern carving. That's minus 1 point there.
No real pumpkins, either, which is a shame, because the... What's the poster? Ernest with a pumpkin around him.
Yeah, there's a couple pumpkins that you see in the background, but yeah, it's not prominently featured.
Yeah,
I would have liked to see more Halloween. I do think it does capture a vibe. Maybe it's more of a nostalgic vibe than anything else, but I don't mind it for this movie. Even though now, as an adult, looking at the scenery and stuff, it doesn't really look autumnal to me. Especially for a Missouri setting, as we talked about. But, all right. So, on a scale of 0 to 10 rim jobs, what would you give? Ernest Scared Stupid.
I'll give it a 6. It's a fun enough film. My biggest gripe with the film is the fact that it's 20 minutes too long. That for at least me is the biggest attraction of this film, because when watching it, it has its moments every now and then. You're laughing, you're having a good time, you're engaged, but it just, and this is most scenes of the film, it just goes on for too long. It doesn't know how to stop and go to something else, and you kind of check out for a bit, and then you check out for 4 minutes, and then you check and you're like, oh, we're on to something new. What's going to happen? It is a fun enough film. I was pleasantly surprised. You know, I think Jim Varney does a great job. He is really funny. He's really comical. I do think his slapstick is pretty fun, and his facial expressions is really fun. Some of the lines he has is fun. But again, too, like that type of comedy, you're either going to love it or you're going to hate it. There's no in between, really. So if you don't like what he has to offer in this, you're not going to really have to like what Jim Varney has to offer on the whole. Overall, I thought the child actors, for the most part, were really good, too. It's the other parents that weren't that great. Eartha Kitt was great, too. And I feel bad for Eartha Kitt being in this film. Like, it's like, oh, hard times, eh? But it's a stupid plot with a stupid premise. The troll is fucking stupid. And they look stupid. But it's a nice enough, like, family film. And I would say, if you're somebody who is a millennial who lived during the time, it's something to, I would say, show your kids now. see what they think. Maybe they enjoy it, maybe they don't. Who knows? But it's a nice little film. There's no harm from it. It's got your classic Disney tropes with the humor, with a lot of it being, especially from the 90s, gross out, and like a lot of it being like speed up and slow down effects with the cinematography. Yeah, 6 out of 10.
Yeah, I would agree. I would probably give this a 6 out of 10 as well. I think like it's a fine film, particularly in terms of what it presents, what it tries to do. It's not like trying to reinvent the wheel or anything like that. It's a nice Halloween movie, especially for family. It does have more of like the 90s Disney element to it, so it's a little bit more risque than probably what they would do now. It certainly does have like some more scarier elements than I would expect from a contemporary Disney movie. And I think, you know, for older kids, this movie is probably pretty funny, and it does hit sort of like the goofier elements with a little bit of Are You Afraid of the Dark mixed in, that I think might be something that would be up to older kids, not quite 10 years old, that they would really like this movie. For me, as an adult, I get the nostalgia feel from it quite a bit, but I think if you didn't grow up in this time period, if you didn't see Ernest Scared Stupid around that time when you were a kid, this might not have as much impact for you, especially because, as we talked about, times have changed quite a bit since this movie. So if you didn't even grow up in this time frame, if you grew up maybe like 10 years later in the 2000s, stuff was really different even at that time. So it might be hard to connect with the movie, but for people who did grow up in that time, the nostalgia factor is really high here. And at least for me, watching this movie, and especially the opening credits, really brought me back into a time frame of the 90s at Halloween time, which is a really big part of my life and one of the reasons why I really enjoy Halloween as a holiday. So I think like your mileage will vary as to whether that will be interesting for you. But if it does interest you, then I think Ernest Scared Stupid does a pretty good job of doing that and presenting some funniness to it, too.
I think the perfect example, too, to kind of like the juxtaposition and like, say, like humor and like what's kind of funny. But on the adult scale, Adam Sandler movies from this time period. Like, hilarious when you're young, but when you watch them now, they're not that funny. Like, if you were to, like, ask me, what's an Adam Sandler film these days that you still find funny? I'd probably say, like, Billy Madison and Big Daddy. And those are probably the only two. But I still have really big nostalgia for, like, you know, if you were to mention, like, Happy Gilmore or Little Nicky or whatever, you know, like, oh, they're fun enough. But I can understand if you were to show, like, a kid, like, you know, a kid these days those films, and they're like, this is fucking stupid. I'd be like, yeah. And they are. But they're fun, aren't they? You know? Me, right? And you could totally say the same about Jim Varney films and, you know, Ernest. It's a totally an encapsulation of a time period that is, at this point, it's pretty far gone.
Mm-hmm.
And what the connection would be for kids, I don't know. But it's something that's nostalgic for people within our time, you know, who got to live through it and, you know, remember it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably the biggest thing, is the nostalgia factor. I don't know if, you know, people now would find this that funny or if they would even enjoy, like, some of the elements to it. But for me, the big nostalgia factor is where it lands at a solid 6. All right, so next week, continuing our Halloween season, I was thinking we'd probably move on to another horror movie so that we don't, you know, kind of like trade off back and forth between horror and nostalgia and stuff like that. So I was thinking something like maybe Terrifier.
Sure.
Which even I've not seen this. We're doing it mostly because it's kind of become big, especially last year Terrifier 2 released, and to pretty critical acclaim, even though it's fucking 2.5 hours long.
Yes.
Which is, like, outrageous, and I can't see the appeal in a slasher movie like this being 2.5 hours long. Well, let's see. But we're going to do Terrifier 1 first, of course, because, you know, we go by... We're OCD. Generally, we try to do the first movie and then the sequel. So, that's what we're going to do. We're going to do Terrifier 1. Anything else you want to add for a Halloween episode before we end it?
No, I think that's about it. Except football starts this week, so go Bills.
Go Bills. Go Bills. That's right. That's the real scary thing about the Halloween season upcoming is the opening Bills season. You don't know what's going to happen.
I swear to God, if they lose on Monday Night Football for Aaron Rodgers and the fucking Jets, I will cancel this podcast.
We'll see.
No, we won't see. It'll either be canceled or you're gonna be doing it.
If it happens and we don't have another episode, then you know we got canceled. Well, we appreciate you listening anyway. Hope you enjoyed our episode on Ernest Scared Stupid. Hopefully we're back for another episode next week on Terrifier for Halloween season. If you want to continue listening to us, if you enjoyed and you want to listen to more, subscribe to us on pretty much any podcasting app that you can think of. We're on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, our home base at Spotify. You can subscribe and leave us a nice review. It always helps us out. We are on Facebook and Twitter or X or whatever it's called, Blood and Black Rum Podcast. Search for us on there. And we have an email address at bloodandblackrumpodcast@gmail.com. Write to us. Let us know what you like, what you don't like. What movies you want us to cover, and we'll keep that in consideration. You can also donate to us at patreon.com/blood and black rum podcast, and we'll put that money back towards beer. Thanks in advance. Hopefully you'll join us next time as we continue our Halloween season all month long, all September and October long until we get to Halloween, with our Halloweenies 2 marathon. We'll be back with Terrifier, and until then,
take care.